you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hello and welcome to the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Victor is an author, scholar, columnist, essayist, and a political and cultural critic. He is also the Martin and Ely Anderson Senior Fellow in Military History and Classics at the Hoover Institution and the Wayne and Marsha Buskey Distinguished Fellow in History at Hillsdale College. This episode is our weekend episode, and we're going to have a look at American politics. It seems that lots of the stories recently are exposing new aspects of our democratic government, and they're taking me back to a passage in Madison's Federalist 10, where he argues that the system of checks and balances would set one man's ambition against the next, and this would be helpful to the exposing corruption in the system. And I think he may be right, or maybe he may be too right, but we will look into lots of political stories today after these messages.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First, he ruined Twitter. Now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the "no animals were harmed" message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Welcome back. I would like to remind people that you can follow Victor at victorhanson.com. The name of the website is The Blade of Perseus, and you can get a subscription for $5 a month or for $50 a year. So come join us at the website. You can also just get a free subscription and get on our mailing list, and we mail out Victor's recent podcasts and articles and such on that list. So please come join us, whoever you are. Victor, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well. We're in a 10-day cold but respite from the California flooding. And remember, we're still in a drought because it's very precious to the Newsom conglomerate to have a drought so they can, you know, destroy California agriculture and put everybody on water rationing. So they let out, I think it's up to 13 million acre feet now. And we had the wettest December 15th to January 15th on record. And yet the reservoirs, I said last time, are still less than 60%. So that's very depressing, but it's part of a, you know, it's a pattern with California. It's been a subject of Fox News shows a lot. I did one with Laura the other night, but Tucker had done one, and they all are doing it, and Sean Hannity, about the states in free fall, which we can talk about that later. I don't quite understand. Newsom was, you know, posturing as a presidential candidate because everything he's done has been an utter failure, but that's beside the point. Other than that, it's sunny today. cold but sunny, and cold for California. Got up to 58 today, so that was something.
Well, let's turn then to politics in America. And I first noticed a article in The Federalist by Samuel Mangold Linnet. And he was talking about, okay, the polls, and he had a Harvard-Harris poll show Trump ahead of Biden and of Harris, and a 10-point lead over DeSantis for 2024. And he said, but the polls are not everything. And so Republicans should not rest on their laurels, I guess you would say, that the, and here's a quote, the American political system no longer operates on the pre-2016 paradigm in which someone seeking to buck conventional wisdom and break with the permanent Washington has a fair shot. You just can't challenge the managerial elite's job security. And he was saying that you're really up against the permanent bureaucracy, the media, and corporate elites, at least Trump would be, and anybody, actually, I think he was suggesting that it's really changed politics. I was wondering your ideas on that.
Well, I mean, what he's saying is that you either have to co-opt them or crush them, because they're going to crush you if you're a conservative. And who is, you know, that famous line in Sam Peckinpah's The Wild Bunch, he said, they, I mean, who is they? I'll tell you who they is. Remember the Edmund O'Brien said, I'll tell you who they is. And I can tell you who they is. It is the permanent administrative state. And who is that? That's the FBI, the IRS, the CIA, the DOJ, the EPA, those people. I wrote about them, called The Unelected, a chapter in The Dying Citizen. But, I mean, they're the ones that do everything from count the votes to determine who gets charged with a crime. Just think about how they change things. So the permanent state suppressed, they had 50 former intelligence operatives who told us that the laptop was Russian disinformation. They tried to destroy the Trump campaign in 2016. They destroyed the Trump transition, as typified by Michael Flynn. They destroyed 2 years of his administration with the whole Mueller hoax. They have enormous powers, and they're not accountable. And so I keep hitting that same nail with that same hammer, but it's, you know, the four last FBI directors have either lied or misinformed the American public and the Congress while under oath. And so it's the permanent state. It's the media. And what do we mean by the media? We mean everything from the New York Times, the Chicago Tribune, the Washington Post, the Los Angeles Times, those big four. And then we're talking about ABC, NBC, CBS, Network News. And one of the most predictably biased is our own public stations, PBS and NPR. And we're talking about two of the three cable news larger stations, MSNBC and NBC. And then we're talking about the whole Silicon Valley nexus. And that's the old Twitter, Facebook, Apple, Google. And so you have that. And then you have another part of that triangle, and it's the ability to raise enormous amounts of money. And I don't think we in the conservative side, we always grew up with the idea that Republicans or conservatives were wealthy. That's ancient. We have no, I mean, the magnitude of wealth of a Bill Gates or a Warren Buffett or a Mike Blumenthal or Mark, it's just staggering. It's the largest concentration of wealth in history. And when you superimpose that riches on this populist dialogue that they're doing it all for us, we're going to eliminate all your natural gas for you. And John Kerry's flying on the private jet for you. And Al Gore's selling to Qatar, the carbon-spewing oil exporter, his worthless cable station for $100 million for you. And that's really hard to fathom that. And so it's very hard when they have the money, and they have the government, and they have the media, and they don't have the people. So we get all of the people, 51 to 55% of the people don't like what's going on with crime. They don't like the border. They don't like suppressing oil and gas production. They don't buy into the Green New Deal. They don't buy into critical race theory, white rage. But it doesn't matter because they have ways of manipulating the flow of information from everything on your the order of your Yahoo or Google search to, you know, arresting somebody. And Peter Navarro, Steve Bannon, performance art arrest in a way that they would never, you know, they would never do that with Eric Holder when he refused a subpoena. So one day at the Capitol, yeah. 120 days, in summer of 2020, they're very asymmetrical. There's no equity under the law either. That's very important, the equity under the law, equality, I should say. It doesn't exist. Yeah.
Well, you know, you said, you mentioned the 51% don't like what's going on. And if I could go to another sort of topic or angle on that, A.B. Stoddard had an article in Real Clear Politics that was arguing that McCarthy had was compromising with the extreme right, and that was cultivating the fright, you know, the fright or making swing voters afraid, which would cut into your 51%. And so her argument was that McCarthy was enabling chaos and attacks and this Freedom Caucus, and that that was going to cut into the vote for the Republicans. What are your thoughts on that?
When I grew up, the extreme right with all the power was the conspiratorial urban move. Corporate America or AT&T or Anaconda Copper, the big money. Who is the extreme right? She's talking about Matt Gaetz?
Yes.
About what? 10 people? And what was their crazy ideas? That you could, the craziest was that somebody could call a vote of no confidence with a speaker. Okay, you can do that in about 10 seconds. And so what? So Matt Gaetz says, I think Kevin McCarthy should have to step down. Let's vote on it. Well, they can do it quickly. It's a distraction, but it's not crazy. And some of the other things about the committee assignments and balanced budget and investigating the weaponization, they were sound. When you talk about radicalization, I mean, nobody in, oh, maybe one or two, nobody says on the right, in Congress on the right, that I'm a member of the, I'm a card-carrying member of the John Birch Society, but whether it's Bernie Sanders or the Squad, they all are openly socialist. They say they're socialists. And the Squad is not some fringe group. They have as much or more control over the Democratic Party than those holdouts do over the Republican Party. But see, these people cannot just look at things down the middle and say this. They have to go extreme right. And they're not worried about what the stream left does. I mean, the Squad are socialist. Members of the Squad, you should go back and read the corpus of things they said during the rioting. Hannah Nicole Jones, the architect of 1619, said looting was not a crime, just property. So BLM, Antifa, go read Molly Ball. I keep hitting that nail down all the time. But in February of 2021, she outlined the whole apparatus. And she told us that they had the ability to modulate the Antifa BLM demonstrations, which is a confession that those hard left groups were joined at the hip with the Democratic Party. And if A.B. Stoddard's so angry, why didn't she just for one nanosecond say, wow, Hillary Clinton put money into the DNC, her campaign put money into DNC, and then they put money into Perkins Coe law firm, who they put money in Fusion GPS, who put money in the hands of a foreign national to subvert a campaign and make lies. And then they fed it with the Clinton connections into the government, and they try to destroy the integrity of an election. And that's pretty radical.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'll just tell you, she did have a poll she was referring to. She said that there's a new Navigator poll that shows only 21% of the independent voters approve of the new House majority. So she was, that seems small, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yes, but I mean, what does that mean? That Navigator, I think it's a research company.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, as I said, all of this media saying these people are crazy, these people are crazy, these people are crazy, the right wing, right. And then you take a poll and it says, you know what, people think they're kind of crazy, but we'll see. Crazy, they won the majority, didn't they? So if she's saying people don't like what there's going on, it's not like they woke up and said, wow, there's these Andy Biggs guy, and Matt. They knew who the Republican Party was, everybody who ran for office, and they won. And they should have won by more, but they did win. So how does she explain that?
Yeah.
And I'm perfectly willing to be symmetrical. I can say, well, you know, they won the Senate and they had Bernie Sanders in there. And they had a lot of nutty people in the House. And because there's a lot of nutty people in the United States. That's why you get what you get. But it's not some conspiracy to hoodwink the voter. Oh, wow, we voted for Republicans and they're all right wing.
Okay. All right. So let's go on then. I was wondering if you could, you have a article out that, well, the Real Clear Politics actually called it Problem is FBI Corruption. But you had 10 things that were not wrong, but were a contrast between Biden files and Trump files that were found in either's residences. And I wanted, since there's 10 things, I wanted to just ask you about three of them, and I'll state them and you can go ahead and talk about them. You said that they have passed judgment on Trump, but not Biden, that the FBI acted asymmetrically, and that the Biden files raised the specter of Chinese Biden malfeasance. And so those are my words on that last, but more or less that's what it sounded like.
Well, it's an ongoing criminal case in both cases, right?
Yeah.
So the DOJ says you don't comment on criminal cases. So the president of the United States is the chief law enforcement officer of the United States in some sense. So what does he do? He goes on 60 Minutes and he says that it's irresponsible. It's unfathomable. How can he do that? It's an open case. How can he be the subject of an investigation and say there's no there there? So he was commenting on cases in both cases before there was a special counsel. In other words, his own DOJ was investigating a rival. And remember, in the first impeachment, filed 2019, I think it was finalized in December of 2020, the charge against Donald Trump was that he got on a phone call and he used the powers of the executive office to delay a shipment of military equipment to a corrupt Ukrainian government on the grounds that they had to clean up their act. And the left said that was an indirect salvo against his potential Democratic rival in 2020, Joe Biden. So remember that, because Joe Biden just ordered a raid against Mar-a-Lago, who is his chief. More than likely at the time, he was probably the chief rival to Joe Biden in 2024. That was an impeachable offense, we were told. The other thing, of course, you mentioned the FBI and symmetry. So it's just the way to answer your inquiry would be, let's just do it this way. The FBI is going to treat Joe Biden exactly the same as they treated Donald Trump. Okay. So three big SUVs with people with guns show up at the Delaware house in the garage. Guys with tight t-shirts and big biceps, fully armed, guard the premises. They swarm into the houses unannounced. They go through everything for 10 hours. They don't let the Biden lawyers tell them what to do. they decide to go into Jill Biden's underwear drawer. They go into Hunter's little child. When he was a child, they go into his clothes. And then when they leave, they scatter papers on the ground and take pictures of it to show you how sloppily, supposedly, or they go into the garage and they take that, those lopsided piles of classified documents, they pour them on the ground by the Corvette and take pictures. And then they leak all this to the press. And they say, you know what, Joe Biden had nuclear codes there, had nuclear secrets. They just let that out. And that's what is the big difference between the way the FBI has one particular classified document problem and another. And another thing that it's really gets me is that, so now when there was the Pence matter, but then the Biden, and now guess what? Everybody is saying, well, we've got to address the entire classified filing system and document system. And you know what? You look at these TV stations or these people on radio on the left, they say, they always ask these rhetorical, do you think that we overclassify things? Yes, I do. When the Mar-a-Lago, what if I had gone into Fox just as minor voice and said, you know, I think the problem with Mar-a-Lago is they overregulate things. They would have said, oh, wow, you're an apologist for Trump. How dare you? That only came up. They don't know whether we overregulate or underregulate. They don't even care. That only came up because Joe Biden was as guilty or more guilty in this article. I think I made a convincing case that he's a lot more guilty than Trump. A lot more.
Yeah.
When you went into Trump's Mar-a-Lago, and by the way, anybody in his right mind knows today, but a month ago, before Joe Biden was president, when he had those documents, and he did have them before he was president, you could have gone into that garage much easier than gone into Mar-a-Lago after Donald Trump was president. There were Secret Service people there. There was no Secret Service people for years at the Biden residence. This thing is leading to something. When you go into Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago and you get the things, they tried their best to leak. They said, well, maybe he was keeping mementos so he could sell them. Or he was trying to, all of that was trial balloon leaks. But they're not going to lead to some bombshells, walls are closing in, psychodrama, melodrama we've heard before. Joe Biden, because he is so corrupt and because he has been so sheltered by the media, when you get a pry bar and you open a little seam and you stick your head through, i.e. the documents, then you look at the whole sordid family. And almost immediately people say, my God, the Chinese Communist Party gave several million dollars to the University of Pennsylvania to help make a think tank for Joe Biden. Why would they do that? Then the next thing we know is, wow, Hunter listed this as a resident. Hunter Biden was in that house and had access to that garage where these classified documents were there for years. And he was doing business with Ukraine and UK. And there are emails where in very detailed fashion, he lays out geostrategic scenarios that are beyond his pay grade, believe me, that may have come. So there's all these things that are coming out of it in a way that they won't come out of Trump, not because Trump is necessarily morally superior to Joe Biden, but because he's been washed, rinsed, and dried by the left. They know every inch of him, and they don't know one inch of Joe Biden, or they don't want to know. So once you get your hand in there and you pull back the curtain, it's pretty revealing. We're going to see a lot of stuff that's going to leak, especially because there's a sizable number of the donor class and members of the Democratic Party and the senior level that don't want him to run because they have a lot of Senate seat exposure next round. And he is declining geometrically, as I said. Yeah.
Yes, of course. Yeah. And then the last one was the specter of a Chinese Biden malfeasance. I don't know if that's the correct word, but.
Well, I mean, I said the Chinese don't do anything unless there's something to be gained. So why not endow Josh Hawley's think tank? Why not go in to say, let's have a Rand Paul? You know what I mean? They do it for me. And they usually pick out left-wing candidates, not always, but usually, because they think they're going to be more sympathetic for state-controlled governments. And they play the race card that we're victims of, you know, racism, which resonates. They got very effective propaganda. And they think these people are very prone to be compromised. Eric Swalwell, a good example. And they're right. They're right. Barbara Boxer, who was our senator for, 20 years? She's a registered Chinese agent, lobbyist. Dianne Feinstein, she had a Chinese lawyer, driver, chauffeur for 20 years. Her husband, the late Mr. Bloom, made a fortune in China. The Pelosi's? Who knows? Who knows? So my point is that they don't do anything unless there's a profit. But in that article, I tried to be pretty comprehensive in 800. I only get 800 words in a, in a syndicated column. But there is, you got to remember another thing is Joe Biden was investigating Joe Biden, right? Until the special counsel came. And he was investigating Donald Trump. So he was basically investigating Joe Biden was investigating two of the likely nominees in the next election as an incumbent president. That's nobody really talked about. I mean, you mentioned, commented, as I said, he weighed in on an investigation that was in progress. And you know what I got angriest about? I think all of the listeners did too. This mantra that was all over the airwaves. Joe Biden self-reported. As soon as he found out, he took it very serious. No, he didn't. He had it for 15 years. He walked out of the Senate with that stuff. He walked out of the vice presidency in 2016-17 after the election. And before he lost office in January of 2017, he's known it this whole time. Why did we find out now? Only because they were investigating Donald Trump and somebody leaked it. Or they thought somebody would leak it because they thought, wow, Joe is a sloppy mess. And before we go on making this classified question a political axe to behead Donald Trump, we better make sure it doesn't swing around and cut us. But they didn't do it out of, or they would have done it much earlier. They suppressed it before the midterms. They knew it was before the midterm, just like they know about Sam Bankman-Fried. They knew that about the midterm. But this, time and space, think of that. So much more time these documents were in the Biden hands and so many more spaces. So there were so many more opportunities for them to, get into the wrong hands, i.e. Hunter's hands. And I hope they do fingerprint DNA analysis of all of Biden's papers. And it would be funny to see who pops up as somebody who perused those documents. They can't even come up with a reason why he took them in the first place. They tried trial balloon number one. It was just hectic. When Joe Biden left the vice president, Joe Biden was compromised both legally, morally, spiritually, and cognitively as vice president. That's what Obama basically summed him up. He said, don't underestimate Joe's ability to F it up. And he was singularly rushed, stressed. It's just, and then they said, he's writing his memoirs. First of all, he doesn't write his memoirs. He hires somebody. But the idea that Joe Biden was there diligently looking at these classified information in a skiff, and then he just made a mistake and took a few papers, that is just ludicrous. He took them out of there probably because he was commenting to members of his family on critical decisions or background information on foreign leaders of which they were doing business. That's a very good possibility. Whether it was Russia or China or the UK or Iran or Ukraine, and you hear Ukraine and UK and Iran, he thought that he could lend expertise to the family members. Nobody would ever find out. Nobody would ever talk about it. Joe might not have even told Hunter, and he would just regurgitate. I think he was a little bit more explicit of that, but that's why he took them out. And they know that, and that's why they haven't speculated. They haven't mentioned one iota of what's on those classified documents. And they could. They don't have to say this document pertains to this. They can say these were matters of assessments of foreign leaders. These were geoeconomic analyses of tariffs or something like that, but they don't.
Which makes them that much more suspect. Victor, let's go ahead and take a break and then come back and we'll talk a little bit more about the FBI and the Charles McGonigal indictment. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
If you owe back taxes, fair warning, you're not going to like this. The IRS is mailing millions of pay-up letters, millions. Then it's up to the 20,000 new IRS enforcement agents to find you. Why does the IRS target you and not millionaires? Here's the reason. Because millionaires have tax lawyers and you don't. You'll pay up, plus interest, plus penalties. You need Tax Network USA, and you need it now. Tax Network USA has brilliant war room strategies to solve your IRS problems quickly and in your favor, like a preferred direct line to the IRS. They know which agents to deal with and which ones to avoid. It's not all bad news for you because Tax Network USA learned of a special limited time IRS offer. They're willing to waive $1 billion in penalties if you qualify. Schedule your free confidential consultation to see if you qualify for this limited time IRS penalty canceling offer. Call 1-800-245-6000. Again, call 1-800-245-6000 or visit TNUSA.com/Victor. Stress may be why you can't lose weight. If you have moderate to high stress, a doctor-formulated weight loss supplement called Lean could be your solution. Chronic stress wreaks havoc on blood sugar, which can cause your body to store excess fat. Stress can also slow your metabolism, which fuels weight gain. And you know all about stress eating and sugar cravings. Now, the good news. The studied ingredients in Lean have been shown to help maintain healthy blood sugar levels, help optimize metabolism, and keep your appetite under control. If your life is a bit stressful and you want to lose weight, add Lean to your healthy diet and exercise lifestyle. Get 15% off and free shipping at takelean.com and enter Victor15. That's promo code Victor15 at takelean.com. Takelean.com. Statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease and is not a substitute or alternative for care from a healthcare provider.
Welcome back to the Victor Davis Hanson Show. You can find Victor on Facebook at The Morning Cup and on Twitter at VD Hanson. And so please, if you're a social media aficionado, join us there. That'll be great. Now, Victor, I wanted to ask you about this McGonigal indictment. He seems to have been a senior FBI official that was secretly working for, and this is the indictment, though, so I don't know if he's guilty or not, but for a Russian oligarch, Oleg Deripaska. I really messed up that word, but tough word to say. He had possibly received $250,000 in payment. And this same guy was a key player in the Crossfire Hurricane targeting Trump on Russian collusion. And he seems to be the real Russian collusion. What are your thoughts on him and the investigation?
A reification of that idea of projection. Anytime these guys start to accuse somebody of something that doesn't exist, you know they're doing it. So this guy, the entire time that Mueller was active, that Devin Nunes was trying to trace it down. He was a principal player in trying to suggest to, as part of the FBI, that Donald Trump was compromised by collusion. At that same time, he was, I guess you would call it money laundering, $250,000 from a Russian oligarch. And the only thing that surprises me, I can't believe that he was indicted. Because why do I say that? Because Andrew McCabe was acting FBI director and he lied four times. He admitted he lied. They didn't indict him. James Comey went before the Subcommittee on Intelligence and said, "Don't remember, can't think of it, not my job." 245 times. Robert Mueller, we mentioned him with a dossier in the Fusion GPS. Christopher Wray, they don't get. Kevin Klein, they just gave him a little slap on the wrist. I think he's back practicing law, even though he admittedly altered a document and diluted a FISA court. And of course, they all gave the FISA court cut and paste folios from the fraudulent dossier. And then they signed off that it was a legitimate and trustworthy piece of evidence. And they knew it wasn't, because at the time they had expressed in writing doubts about the dossier, and yet not doubts to the FISA court that they wanted to give them the right to surveil people. And during the Mueller investigations, when they subpoenaed the phones of the pertinent FBI investigators, they were wiped clean. So what will they not do? I keep returning to that tired old question. What will the FBI not do?
But in this case, they're saying that he was working for the Russian oligarch, right? So is that, I mean, I not that you can weigh the differences in criminality necessarily, but that does seem a little bit more extreme than mucking around in U.S. politics. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, and I'm sure your listeners would probably think that way. But
trying to destroy Carter Page? Bragging and laughing about how you did an ambush interview to destroy Michael Flynn on an ossified crazy idea of the Logan Act, and then boasting about it. As I said, taking an email and altering the email to deceive a federal judge, cut and pasting things to deceive from a phony dossier. It was, you know, Donald Trump urinated on the sheets in some hotel to get back at the Obama. That crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Submitted that to a judge when they knew it was false. Lying to a federal investigator while under oath. Lying to a congressional committee. How about James Comey meeting with the president of the United States in a one-on-one confidential conversation and then going out and recording it on an FBI apparatus, I guess an iPad, and then taking that thing and leaking it through a third party to the New York Times? Now, it had to be, and then saying, well, it wasn't top secret classified. It was probably maybe confidential. What would be more top secret than a one-on-one conversation with the president of the United States in which he lied and said, you're not under investigation? He admitted that he was under investigation.
Yeah.
I mean,
go ahead.
They are so arrogant. I mean, why do they have to put leg cuffs on Peter Navarro? Why do they have to stop a guy, John Eastman, at the airport and grab his cell phone? Why do they have to go with James O'Keefe at 2 a.m, march him out in his underwear? Why does CNN show up at the very time that the FBI does when they want to raid Roger Stone's home? Do they have any, why don't they just, if that's the way that they want to enforce the law, why didn't they do that with Eric Holder? He refused a subpoena? Why didn't they investigate Barack Obama? If you think that there was quid pro quo, he said on a hot mic that he wanted the Russian government under Putin to give him space and i.e. not act up so that he would be flexible on missile defense. And guess what? We canceled missile defense and Putin put off until after Obama was reelected the invasion of Crimea and Eastern Ukraine. Investigate that. So You get the impression that insidiously, incrementally, we've lost our freedom. It's scary. We have people who are not elected to anything, and they have judge, jury, and executioner power, and they exercise it, and they're arrogant, and they feel there's zero consequences. When the FBI director, Christopher Wray, given the controversies that swirled around his previous three predecessors, Mueller, Comey, McCabe, and given that in the news, there had been FBI agents that were sent on the prompt of the teachers union to go in and surveil parents that were worried about the indoctrination of their kids through mandatory critical racial theory indoctrination. Given all of that was going on, all of that, you would think that Christopher Wray, when he was in front of a congressional senatorial committee, that he wouldn't just say, I got an appointment. I can't stay much longer. I have an appointment. And then get into a $60 million FBI jet and fly to the Adirondacks for his cabin, his vacation home. But that requires a level of hubris that's just stunning, because he's basically saying, the law is me. I don't care. I can do whatever. And given the background of all of this sordid FBI news, you'd think that he'd be careful. I think his attitude is après moi la deluge, that I'm going to enjoy this until I'm going to ride this FBI job and its retirement until the whole thing blows up, because they must know it's going to blow up.
Yeah, I think they do, you know. And well, I just, it seems to me, I know you're going to worry about this, but it seems to me that colluding directly with or working for directly a Russian oligarch would be more akin to treason than the things that you've said. But maybe, once again, I'm wrong. Sorry, I'm pushing this. It seems to me. Yeah, go ahead.
Is there a precedent? So who did the dossier? Was it Christopher Steele that, you know, he went all the way over to Moscow and he traipsed around with a magnifying glass and a pipe and tried to find this scent on that trail? No, he hadn't been to Russia in, I think, 15 years. He called up whom? Charles Dolan. And who was he? He was a Clinton former lackey. And then he went to the other Russian in the Brookings Institute that was a Clinton satellite. And what did they do? They fed Hillary Clinton stuff. And what was the stuff they fed from the dossier and other stuff? It was probably Russian disinformation. So essentially, cut out all of the paywalls, cut out DNC, Perkins Co., Fusion GPS, and cut out even the dossier itself in its final form. The material that Hillary Clinton compiled and was releasing through the State Department and DOJ, the Bruce Orrs and the FBI, James Baker, to all of her pet journalists, right? Mother Jones, all of that stuff. It was coming from the Russians. A lot of it was. It was Russian disinformation. They knew it. They knew it. And they knew on the eve of the election that Hunter's laptop, we know that they knew it was not Russian disinformation. So when the Russians were disinforming us, if I could use that strange verb, participle, they didn't care. They denied it. And when it wasn't, they created it. And by the way, this had national security implications, if you let me just a minute. So this had
go ahead.
Because we're in a proxy war with Ukraine. Okay. None of us like Putin. He's a thug. Yes. And we don't cry any crocodile tears when this murderer gets an unfair deal or bad publicity. But we're talking about the interest of the United States, not Putin. So when you use Russian collusion and you know it's false, or Russian disinformation, when you know it's false, i.e., you broadcast fake news that Donald Trump was colluding with the Russians in Afghanistan and had the Russians had a hit list of Americans that we're going to kill. And you know that's false. And you spread the lies that the Russians created Hunter Biden's laptop. And you know that's false. And they know it's false. And then you spread the lie that there's billions, millions of dollars that are in coming from Russia for ads, and they have bots everywhere, when you know it's only a minor little operation, and you know that's false. At some point, what you're doing is you're telling this foreign volatile government that we're going to systematically lie about you and use your reputation and what you do inside American politics. And it wasn't like they didn't have legitimate things to get angry about Russia. After all, they were hacking.
Yeah.
Barack Obama said, hey, cut that out, Vladimir, cut it out. And Joe Biden said, if you're going to hack us, here's a list of stuff you're hacking. Take these four out. Don't hack us. Yeah. So what I'm saying is that they have helped prep the battlefield in this strange new Cold War with Russia, because they have systematically used Russia to fabricate Russian crimes that didn't exist for political purposes of getting Joe Biden or Hillary Clinton elected. And then the crimes that did exist, like going into Crimea and going into Eastern Ukraine during the Obama administration, are hacking vital U.S. institutions. Obama and Biden didn't do anything about it, which brings us back to the original premise. Who appeased the Russians? Who created reset? Who took that jacuzzi button and ran off at the last moment to the summit in Geneva, took it from a hotel and pushed it, mistranslated apparently? It was them. It was the Clinton, Obama, Biden nexus. They were the ones that said, oh, we were too tough on Russia after Georgia. Oh, we're going to reset. Oh, we're going to modulate those sanctions. Oh, we're going to push democracy. They got us in this whole mess because they did the two worst things you can do in foreign affairs. Talk loud, accusatory, provocatively, and be weak. So they went in there and they signaled Putin, Obama's got to get elected. Part of the reset basically is for you to behave until he gets reelected. Well, that's just a coded word. After he gets reelection, do what you want. We don't care. If you say, I don't have space until I'm reelected, you're saying after I'm reelected, I have space to let you do what you want, i.e. get rid of missile defense, do what you want. And so they appeased him, and then they gave these lectures to him. You have to support democracy. You need open, transparent. You're not treating gays right. Women don't have a full. That's what they did. And that just enraged him because he thought, these guys are weak. And these weak people are lecturing me, Vladimir Putin. It was a lot better for Trump to do just the opposite. Think what he did. He praised Putin. That's why Crazy Clapper said, Trump is a Russian asset. He acts like a Russian asset. That's what Brennan basically accused. They all did. And what did he do? He just said, I have no problem with Putin. He understands me. I'm not demonizing him. And then he raised the sanctions on the oligarchs. And then he killed, 200 mercenaries in Syria when they attacked a U.S. installation. And then he got out of that crazy missile deal with Russia. And then he sent offensive weapons to Ukraine that Obama and Biden were too timid to send. And he did that. He did a lot of other stuff. But he talked nice and was tough. And they talked tough and were weak.
Yeah. All right, Victor, well, let's go ahead and have another break, and then we'll come back and talk about Adam Schiff. I know you say a lot of things in a lot of places kind of independently, but I thought maybe we could have a moment where you have a time to just sort of look at his whole career, if I can call it that, in the Intelligence Committee. So everybody hang in there, and we'll be right back.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? or the friends you find along the way. Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day.
So what makes a life a good one?
In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome back, Victor. So Adam Schiff, we all know he's a bad egg, but I haven't heard anybody fully explain and discuss him. And I know that you know a lot about his career beyond even the Intelligence Committee. So I was hoping you could give us some explanation or discussion of him as a politician.
Well, he was in the California legislature. That's what I remember. And back in the, I don't know when it was the 90s. And he was sort of, he was just one of these super achiever kids. He went to, I think he went to Stanford. He went to Harvard Law School. And then he got elected to Congress. And he was on that Intelligence Committee that Devin Nunes chaired. And I think he used to praise Devin Nunes for being tough on Russia. Because you remember in the 2014 election and the 2012 election, the presidential 12 election and the 14 midterm, Nunes was warning everybody that Russia was trying to wage disinformation, and Schiff was sort of an ally of his. He wasn't, I know that in this area, the only reason I remember him that he, the local Armenian community was always trying to get some needed and necessary resolutions about Turkey's treatment, you know, admissions of the genocide. And Schiff was, I think he came to Fresno once, but he was very prominent. And then he got into the entire 2016 cycle. And look what he did. Almost everything he did was either ethically or illegally done, or was immoral, such as they had, when Nunes was chairman, he had the majority report where he systematically, succinctly laid out how the dossier was formed, how the FBI had a role in hiring Christopher Steele as a contractor, how the information was likely false, how Carter Page was framed, how they abused the FISA process, and how they used this conglomeration of DOJ, FBI to ambush Michael. It was all true. And what did he do? He said it was all lies. He said it was all lies. And then he issued a minority report as the ranking minority member on that committee. It was all lies. Nobody, if you ask any leftist today, your life depends on that this answer, which is a more valid document, which is more accurate, the Schiff minority or the Nunes majority, they will tell you the majority is majority report was. Do you remember during the impeachment where he read into the congressional record what he said was the Trump phone call, what he kind of made up? And so Trump says this, and then Trump said this, and then it was all impressionistic. It wasn't a transcript, but he acted as if it was. He swore that he did not know who the whistleblower was or anything about Vindman. Vindman had contacted him. The whistleblower had contacted Vindman and said, you know, there's this phone call and back and forth that Vindman heard, and the whistleblower hadn't heard it. Vindman had, you know, that I should say that Vindman probably called the whistleblower, and they concocted this this operation to suggest that Donald Trump did a quid pro quo based on Vindman listening in. And then they corroborated with Schiff, which was the basis for the entire impeachment proceeding. And he denied that. He completely denied that. And the worst thing he did was he went on television serially for over a year in the midst of the Mueller investigation that was leaking like a sieve. And they would ask him, what is the status? He says, well, I can't disclose everything because, of course, I'm the chairman of the Intelligence Committee. So I can't disclose what I know. But let me tell you, there's a lot there. And that's what he did. There was nothing there. So he abused his position on the Intelligence Committee to give a false impression of what these classified documents showed. Yeah. So we could go on, but his whole career, the last 5 years, has been nothing but amoral. And now he's decided he's going to run for U.S. Senate. That will be interesting to see in this state because, you know, it's a 65% blue state. There's not one Republican statewide officer. There's supermajorities in the legislature. There's only, I guess there's what, 11 or 12 Congress people out of 52, 53 seats that are Republican. So on the one hand, he should be a strong candidate, but he is also woke and he's a white male and he's a rich kid and he's obnoxious. And so I don't think he's going to win. I don't, because there's a lot of other candidates that have more woke credentials than he does. And he's going to be running in the same year that maybe Donald Trump is at least running in the primaries. And all of the things that he accused Trump of doing have proved to be false. And so a lot of people, his opponents, I don't know what they're going to do with him. He's an embarrassment. And he's so right now. He's so angry because he cannot be on the Intelligence Committee. You take Adam Schiff off the Intelligence Committee and it's like you emasculated him. You know why? Because he had one effective mechanism. He would get on television and he would wrinkle his brow and he'd look troubled and he'd say, I'd like to talk, but I just can't because this is classified information. But let me assure you, it's damning. And when you can't do that, what good is it? What good is he? He has no value. Yeah. And so they
no, he can't.
Very smart. McCarthy is really surprising a lot of people. He's been very tough. He's been very smart. He didn't say he can't be on a committee. He can be on the Water Resources Committee. He can be on the, I don't know, the 50 Cent Commemoration Committee. He can be on anything, but he can't be on the Intelligence Committee. And that's what's driving him crazy, because that's the one he wants to be on.
That's where all the power is, right? You can pretend like you've got.
That's where somebody can lie. And by the way, I mean, it was the director of national intelligence, I think Ratcliffe, who said that they had a pretty good idea that the people who were leaking on the House Intelligence Committee was Adam Schiff and his circle. They were leaking stuff all the time, as was the Mueller investigation. So it's we'll see how far his Stanford, his Harvard, his arrogant demeanor goes in California.
Yeah. I have one last question then.
One advantage, and we know now, rascal and scoundrel that he was, he was using backdoor channels to Twitter and I think also Facebook to try to get them to deplatform or cancel or suppress or censor his critics, people he didn't like. And apparently they did. Mm-hmm. And so that suggests to me that he had an in with Silicon Valley, which in California, there's three things you have to do to win a state office. You have to be Democrat. You have to have some identity politics fides because 45% of the electorate is Mexican-American or Latino, and then the other 15 to 20% is Asian or African-American. I think the so-called white population is down to 40 or below. You have to have that fides. And the third is you got to tap into Silicon Valley money. and he's a Democrat, and he can tap into Silicon Valley money. But I don't know. I don't think people like him. Ultimately, the irony of white male politics is that if you're a left-wing white male and you convince everybody, like Mark Milley tried to, that there's white privilege, white privilege, white privilege, and there's white rage, white rage, white rage, and there's white supremacy, white supremacy, white supremacy, and all of your identity politics, people of color almost are saying, you know, whiteness is a plague and it's toxic. It's a woman the other day said it's like animals. It's every day someone says something. But you're a white male. At some point, you see what I'm saying? It's like holding a, firecracker in your hand and lighting it. At some point, somebody's going to say, yeah, Adam, you're one too. You're a white male. And white males are toxic. They don't say, none of these people say, Millie didn't say, I'm going to go out, ferret out right-wing white rage. Or they don't say, I'm going to go out and see conservative white privilege. They don't even preface it with that. They don't preface it. It's just white. And Adam Schiff has been a purveyor of that. And he thought he could ride that, you know, tidal wave of identity politics, but he fits the profile that people are targeting. So maybe he can.
Yeah, he sure does.
I'm the good white male. I hate white males too, but I'm the good white male. And we'll see how that works. That's the Gavin Newsom gambit, isn't it?
Yeah, he's got the same problem. Absolutely. Well, Victor, last question. What?
Lecturing on why the Second Amendment and the Republicans that want guns are so awful when he's surrounded by all these people heavily armed that are protecting him.
Yeah. I have one last question. I mentioned Madison's Federalist 10 at the beginning, where he says ambition against ambition will root out corruption and make the federal system even stronger. And after we finish talking here, I have the question is, maybe it doesn't make it stronger, but it weakens it. And I was wondering what your views are on that.
Well, Madison wrote the Constitution, and Jefferson, Hamilton, and others had been writing, specifically Hamilton and people in the Federalist Papers. They all agreed on one thing, that factionalism is innate to humankind. So one of the driving forces of our Constitution was, take it as a given that if we are united now against the British, the moment we have no common enemy, we're going to break into factions. It always happened. And they had studied the Catalan conspiracy in Rome. They had studied the Gracchi violence. They had studied Cleon in Athens. They had studied the execution of Socrates. Okay. So they were trying to craft not a utopian solution of ending factionalism, but a checks and balance so that one faction would not be more powerful than the other and eliminate it, and then end in autocracy. And so innate to our system is there's always going to be differences, and they're going to have a creative tension, a yin and yang, but no one is going to be able to aggregate absolute power, because they felt that that was a more dangerous threat than ossified political, you know, stasis that you're not doing anything, or you're fighting all the time, or talking. And, you know, it's arguable whether they were right or not. I think they were, but they created our system where it's self-correcting. So president goes in and he's got 65% on election day, and he's usually down to 40. And if he's a crook, or he's got legit, you can impeach him, or you can override his veto, and he can make appointments, but he has to have the appointments confirmed. And when people are frustrated with a system, then they try to empower the deep state and elevate the FBI, or they issue executive orders that they shouldn't be doing, or they stack the courts, or they try to get rid of the Electoral College, or end the filibuster, or bring in two, but they have to find mechanisms to go out of the constitutional system, which is pretty ironclad. It's very hard to be a dictator in the United States, given the three branches of government and the checks and balances of each. But when we have abuses, it's usually not because necessarily one party controls both houses of Congress and most of the courts and the presidency. That can happen, but it's rare. It's when our informal mechanisms of audit, and that's, I'm talking about the press mostly, the press. When you have the media and it joins a political party and it's suppressed, and you do that in the electronic age of instant information accessibility, then you've got a real problem because you have a fusion party. It's something, and it's no accident when you read 1984, that genius George Orwell in 1946 understood, and he looked at the Soviet Union and communist parties forming in Europe after the war, he understood that if you control news outlet, the Pravdas in Eastern Europe or in Russia or what was happening in China, and you have the means of production, and I'm afraid that our corporate world is becoming very, very woke, and it's, then you can really warp a constitutional or consensual government. You really can. And that's what's scary, because it has checks and balances. Mm. That's what happened, because we, look what's happened. We impeached a president twice. We impeached him as a private citizen. We impeached him the moment he lost majority in Congress in his first term. We'd never done that before. We've never done all that at once. And that was pretty scary. We tried to overthrow a government. We did things that you can't even imagine. Rod Rosenstein and McCabe thinking of tapping a president, James Comey listening in to participate in the conversation and then memorializing and leaking it with exemption, FBI director lying, and all of that we didn't know about. That was all suppressed. Under laptop, imagine, just, can you imagine this? I can't, but just imagine that George Bush is president and his daughter, they used to call them Gin and Tonic.
Gin and Tonic, yeah. I don't know what the real name is.
Two daughters were part of an international consulting firm, and they had made $50 million in Kuwait or Iraq or somewhere. And they were complete. I mean, they went after them because in a party, I think it was in Latin America, one of them had too many gin and tonics. Can you imagine if they were crackheads? And can you imagine if they had a laptop in partial undress using drugs with hired gigolos, I should say? And you can imagine that they said, I'm getting tired of the big guy and Mr. 10%, and then throw in a Bobulinski character. Could you imagine what the left would do to George Bush? I mean, they called him a Nazi as it was. So it's so asymmetrical. At some point, we need to discuss, why is it? Who are these people? Is it the journalism schools? Is it the mood on campus? Is it the idea that a young person, 18, 19, 20, that majors in journalism, he goes to journalism school and he scans the landscape and the environment, and he says, uh-oh, if you want to get ahead and you want to make a lot of money, you got to be on the left. So I need a card-carrying left card. And the more that I slant the news and the more that I am propagandistic, I will get a job at a network news or this and work my way up. That's what I think it is. That young people see all the rewards on the left, career rewards.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But you know what? If you write a conservative story, you're never going to get a Pulitzer Prize. Can't do it. Never be hired in the New York Times unless you're going to be, what, one of these columnists that they hire as kind of a paid, useful idiot. So that's the problem. There's no incentives for these people to be moral. There should be. A person should have an an innate morality, a sense, a compass within themselves, but these people don't. Now, and I think the university ultimately is the embryo that sprouts these people, that bursts them, that is responsible. Well, that's another story for another day.
Yeah, that is right. We've touched that topic a couple of times, but maybe it needs greater treatment. Well, Victor, that's the end of our time. Thank you so much for all of your wisdom this hour. Oh, and I would like to remind your listeners here, especially in the Valley, that February 6th at Clovis Community College, they're going to have Daniel D. Martino. He is a Venezuelan who is getting a PhD at Columbia University in economics, and he lived his early life in socialist Venezuela. And he will be talking at 6 p.m. at Clovis Community College. And if you could text your attendance to 559-492-7282. That's 559-492-7282. That would be great.
Thank you, everybody, for listening.
This is Tammy Wink and Victor Davis Hanson, and we're signing off.